Why, oh why, is this the news, according to me? Well, it is the news, according to me. It's Monday. This is actually Monday evening, 6:14, on June 7th, 2021. And that's the way it was. There you go. My oh my, what's going on here? We've got a lot of things going on, but the most important thing is what's in my cup. I have sweet tea from Arby's. There's something you don't hear every day. I went over to Arby's here to have sweet tea. I am in Ohio, southwestern Ohio, near Dayton, Ohio. And I was pleased to see that when I got out of the airport, I ended up going to a van to get to a hotel. And the van driver wasn't wearing a mask. So I took my mask off. And then I got to the hotel and nobody was wearing a mask. So I kept my mask off. Then I walked over to the Arby's to get some lunch. And nobody there was wearing a mask either. And the dining room was open. So I went in, ordered a sandwich, sat down, and enjoyed my meal. Upon which time I left the Arby's, I did not put my mask on to walk out of the Arby's. And then I walked back to the hotel without a mask on. And then I got into the hotel, didn't put my mask on. I got all the way to my room without my mask on. I got to the room and decided to take a nap. So I put my mask on. I didn't know what would happen while I was sleeping. Never know what's happening when you're sleeping. No, I didn't do that. I didn't put my mask on. I just put a pillow over my head. Yeah. It's hard to... hard to breathe that way, but I noticed that I felt like I was operating as a normal individual, a normal human being, more as normal as I can be, and that's not really saying much, but yeah. So I was quite impressed, actually, with the whole thing of being able to just walk around and go places without a mask on. So they got us to this point now where that feels abnormal. And what's weird about that is there are people in this country, there are states in this country that are still locked down. It blows my mind that we are there. Now I have to say, as I was out and about without my mask on, I noticed that there were people dropping dead like flies everywhere. But at least I didn't have to wear my mask. I had to step over a lot of bodies. Now, I don't mean to be light, to take it lightly that people have died from this thing. What I'm saying is, we need some perspective here. The rhetoric and the ramping up of the hysteria over this thing has led to a tremendous fear, and it blows my mind. people think that, oh, if you get the Rona, you're going to die. It's deadly. It's a deadly disease. It has killed some people. I mean, when you look at the numbers, folks, look at the numbers and compare them to some of the worst flu seasons we've ever had. Regular flu. This turns out to have been a bad flu season. Now, the fact that it affected a particular segment of the population overwhelmingly is not like a normal flu season. Or a bad flu season. But we have, and I'm not saying this because I'm trying to make light of the fact or belittle the idea that, well, that hardly anybody died. People did die, and they mattered. There were people who mattered. I'm not talking about the color of their skin. I'm talking about just the fact that they matter because they're people. And life is precious, and it's lost. I'm not demeaning that or belittling that. What I'm saying is we've got to get a grip here. We need to get a grip on the and some perspective on the reality of this thing. There are people that flip out and go nuts if you do not wear your mask. And it's, you know, I'm afraid that we have, you know, we have, there are people who have been banned from flying for the rest of their lives for not wearing a mask on a plane. That's a little extreme. Now, I don't know why, if the airline requires you to wear a mask and you choose to go on that flight, knowing that they require you to wear a mask and you don't wear your mask and then you get banned, I don't know why you would do that. Like you're trying to make some kind of statement, like you're going to win that war. You're not going to win that one. I've seen people met by the county sheriff at the other end of a flight because they refused during the flight to keep their mask on. You know what? I hope you made your point there. You know, if you didn't like it, you should have drove. You know, you're trying to go to Europe, don't want to wear your mask, take a boat. Take your own boat. Buy a boat. Power, you know, sail it over there. Keep your mask off. It's your choice to go to Europe. You can choose to go over there your own way instead of having somebody else, you know, if you don't want to wear your mask. That's your option. Freedom to travel does not mean freedom, you know, from the rules that are set by other people. You still have the right to travel. You just don't have the right to make everybody else, you know, obey your rules on that process. And there has to be, some unhappy medium there. But, no, 100 years ago, a ship would have been the only way you could have gotten there. Well, not the only way, but it would have been the way to get there. And uh, 200 years ago, that was even more difficult. So don't think that flying is some kind of innate right that we have as human beings to fly places. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and this thought just crossed my mind. This is going to be a bunch of random thoughts today, tonight, this evening, until I run across some headlines that we can talk about. I was thinking about this random thought. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be able to fly. I wanted to be able to swim underwater and not have to wear scuba tanks. I wanted to go under and explore the sea. I wanted to go into space, go up in the air, be able to fly around like a bird. That'd be cool. What's amazing to me, you know, and I kind of wonder, I always kind of wonder why, you know, God, if God put us at the top of the piggy pile here of creatures on the earth in terms of intellect and ability to communicate and our thinking, reasoning skills and creativity, all those things. Why did he give us wings? Why didn't he give us gills? Why didn't he give us the ability to be amphibious? And you know, the ability to fly, all those things. Well, if we could fly, if we had wings, we never would have invented the airplane. Why would you? You don't see birds hopping on airplanes. If we could swim in the sea, you know, with gills, why would we You know, we probably wouldn't have invented the boat even. We just always would have crawled into the water and swam, done whatever we want to. So, I don't know where we would have gone if we'd had all those things. Who knows? Maybe we would have gone further, faster. I don't know. But the fact is that we can fly. And we can go underwater. And we can go across the sea. And we can go into space. Because it wasn't just our ability to... what our physical abilities are. Our mental abilities have taken us beyond what our physical abilities have, are able to do. And when you stop and think about it, that's even more amazing to me, at least for me. I am more amazed by that than I am by what our physical abilities can do. That's pretty amazing, too. That's also an amazing thing, but stop and think about what humanity has done, what society has done with regard to medical things, with regard to engineering and our ability to change metal, work with metal, create things. I saw a really interesting video a while back. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was talking about, you know, just the computer mouse. This was back when people used to have mice that, a mouse for your computer that had cords. And the guy had a corded mic there, or mouse there. And he was talking about how, you know, we didn't think much of it. You go out, buy a mouse for $10 for your computer. Wasn't a big deal. So it's just a little plastic mouse. It's a disposable item. If it gets wrecked, you don't really think that much about it. Well, stop and think about it. If you were just living in the woods with, you know, a native, so to speak, just living in a tribal community with no ability to, you didn't have modern technology with you, and you tried to make that mouse. And all the things that go into that. You know, you have to go out and mine materials. You have to find materials to melt and cook down and create and mold and do all the things you have to do to make that mouse. It would take you a lifetime, and it probably wouldn't look like a mouse. It'd probably look ridiculous. Probably made out of clay. And it wouldn't work, and you wouldn't have a computer to plug it into because, you know, it's all you made was a mouse. And the computer, you know, think about the computer, that's just that much more complicated, and how much that would take for one person to do all that, to actually build a computer from scratch. How many years would it take you if you could even do it in a lifetime? So there is this power of the collective, this power of society building technology on technology and our ability. So if one person creates a machine or works on a part for a machine, and then another person works on another part for a machine, if, you know, thousands of people working on parts for machines, but they're specializing in one particular part or part of that machine. If one, you know, one group of people that are mining for minerals and doing things that are, and you have another group of people who are taking those minerals and doing things with those that are creating plastics and creating metal and machinery and gadgets and cogs and sprockets. Another group of people who are creating, you know, the design and the software and all the other things that go into a computer, and then you get the computer itself. You know, you get all those different things that are happening along the supply chain of going from what's called vertically integrated, going from raw material to a product that is useful and amazing. And when we, this is not something that one person can do, but it's groups of people in a part of a society that build that supply chain, that economic chain of work that we can do. And once in a while, I'll be sitting on an airplane or driving in a car or on a bus or whatever it is. And this thought will come to mind occasionally about all the things, all the people that had to come together to make that airplane fly. Not just that one flight. That's a whole other thing. The ground support, the fuel, all the things that have to happen. But all the things that culminated to the point of that airplane being able to fly. And I'm talking about 100 years ago. When the development of flight was happening, and the engines and all the other things that were being developed and being built one thing on another. And then you had, you know, sheet metal industry. And then you had the rubber and tire industry. You have the ceramics industry for braking and all the other things that are going on up there. And the tires and the heat resistant materials and the high tech alloys for engines and jets and those kinds of things. Electronics is a whole amazing, marvelous world in and of itself. What has happened with electrics? With the electricity and everything that's happened with that. You stop and think about all those things and how it has all come together. We take it for granted. And we sit down in a car and think, oh, this is an old tired car. But the effort that was put into that has a tendency to go past us without recognition sometimes. The thousands upon thousands, maybe millions of people who contributed to that ability to create that car, and not just one car. Thousands upon thousands of that particular model of car, let alone all the other models and all the other things that were able to be produced every year. And that supply chain, I'm going to call it the supply chain, the economic chain. Let's call it the economic chain. This delicate balance of all these things that culminate and build upon each other, and how that can all be reduced very quickly. In the event of a disaster or the event of some kind of a ransomware software hack, somebody hacks into something now. And we take those things for granted. We take this whole, all that stuff for granted until you go to a third world country. And you realize how much we take this stuff. Just electricity in and of itself, take that for granted. I spent some time in Africa back in the 80s. And the compound that I had stayed on while I was there, most of the time while I was there, was... They ran the generator in the evenings. They would run it from about 5 in the evening until, I'm estimating on the time, because we didn't really run anything by the clock there. It was just kind of, well, the sun is there. It's time to fire up the generator. They would start up a generator, and then that would run until about 10 o'clock at night or till, soon after sunset, until everybody should be in bed, and they would turn the generator off. So we would only have electricity for about 5 or 6 hours a day. Now, if they needed it for something else, where they were doing something, they would turn the power on. But typically, they would keep it off. And the interesting thing about that was, I spent some time there. And I got back, and the one thing I noticed more than anything was that when I would reach out to turn on a light switch, I was taken back by that. the ability to just reach out, flip that switch, and the light would come on. How much I had taken that for granted. How unaware I was of that basic thing. And every time I would turn on a water faucet, and drinkable water would come out of that faucet. And one side was hot, the other side was cold. I think those two things were probably the most obvious for me in terms of culture shock. Now, you might want to ask yourself right at this time, since I've already told you what's in my cup, of which I am taking a sip right now. Why am I talking about all this? Well, there's a reason. There's a reason I'm talking about it. And I might just share that reason with you after this message from our sponsor. Wait. I'm not going to do that because I don't have a sponsor. But I will go ahead and share that message with you now. I was trying to create a cliffhanger there. Didn't really work because there's no cliff. So that's kind of a problem. The reason I'm sharing this is because, and I mentioned the word collective, and I think that it's important we understand there is this difference between collectivism and individualism. And for some reason, the idea of individualism, for some reason, is in the world of academia, especially on the leftist, the wokeism stuff, the left-wing, the liberal mindset, anyway, is that this, the collective is more important than the individual. The identity, the group identity is more important than just an individual having rights of their own. Everybody has to have special rights. They have to be put into a box, which is, I would contend that whole movement, and whether they realize it or not, they think that they're a champion for the oppressed and for the underclass, that they have labeled them as such. And there's this idea that they are standing up for those. And yet what's really happening is this is a circling around a particular class that's not protected. And the collective can be very powerful as a society when we come together. The collective mindset can be very, very powerful, but that collective coming together of society has to be voluntary. If you force people into a collective society, if you cast them into the system as a cog in the wheel, you will never advance.
Oh, how do you know that? You don't know that.
Oh, yeah. Most of the tribal people in the world, from the Druids in Europe, Germanic tribes, I should say, the Druids, whatever they're, the Germanic tribes, any place in societies where there have been tribal, I'm not just talking about Africa. We think of tribes in Africa, and we think of tribes in the United States. They're just people groups. Tribes are people groups. The Europeans had people groups as well as the, the Inuits, whatever group you want to talk about. The tribes are simply, the Bible speaks of nation will turn against nation. And what they're really talking about is people group against people group. If you look at the actual, literally, translation of those things, it's people group will rise against people group. Well, those people groups are undefined, or were undefined, That was the goal of America. It was a melting pot where the past identity didn't matter anymore. We had an identity as one vision in America, to be American. It wasn't about being European American or African American or South American, whatever is American, Latino American, whatever the American thing is, whatever subgroup you're part of, whatever identity box they put you in. The power that we had in this nation was that we came together willingly, not forcibly, with our gifts and our talents, and we contributed to society because we had a common vision. There has not been a leader in this nation for a long time who has really been able to communicate that vision and pull us together. I think that's probably, if there's one thing that was missing with Donald Trump, was his ability to define the mission of our country and communicate it, to articulate it in a way that everyone could embrace. We saw the results of his policy, of his mindset, which were basically a closer embrace of the principles and the policies that made this country great, made it a great nation, with regard to economics and industrial productivity. However, we had a news media who was not on board with that. We had a group of individuals who were convinced that he was just a bad man. He's a bad man. Their focus was on the man, not on the policy, not on the country, not on where our country could go. Because we have lost that ability to see America as a nation of liberty-minded individuals. It has now become this collective. Everyone is owed something. Everyone is offended. The oppressor needs to be fought back against. And it's becoming mainstream. It's becoming normalized. And what I mean by that is, there is a professor. This is all culminating to this one story. There is a professor at Yale University, this woman. Now, I don't know if I can find her quote here real quickly. I'm going to try to find the quote from her. And I don't see it here yet, but there is... I'm going to have to try to do a search for this as I'm speaking, but this woman is going on about how she wants to kill all white people. This is a professor at Yale. And she's on video doing that. And this is not just once. This is twice. She's a psychiatrist. Let's see if this is the Washington Examiner. Let's see if they've got something on this. She fantasizes about killing random white people, and she's defending her comments. This is her quote. "I had fantasies of unloading a revolver into the head of any white person that got in my way, burying their body, and wiping my bloody hands as I walked away relatively guiltless with a bounce in my step. Like I did the world an effing favor," said Dr. Aruna Kalanani, whatever her name is. The comment was made during a public lecture titled "The Psychopathic problem of the white mind, which this lady gave at the Yale School of Medicine's Child Study Center on April 6th. The lecture included numerous criticisms of white people amid the admission that she fantasized about killing them. During the lecture, she also said she stopped communicating with her white friends as "there are no good apples out there," end quote, because white people make her blood boil, she said. Continue the quote. This is the cost of talking to white people at all. The cost of your own life as they suck you dry. She continued explaining. She said she had systematically cut her white friends out of her life. Around 5 years ago, I took some actions. I systematically white ghosted most of my friends. I have less than 1% left, she said. It was also a public service. Now, let me tell you, if I was one of her white friends, you're done with me. Because, one, you're a racist bigot. And two, you need some help. If you're a psychiatrist and you're so unaware, self-unaware of your problems, you've got some serious issues, folks. That's if this is where you're going. She since defended the comments, saying in an interview published Friday, quote, "Before I gave the talk, I said, I want you to observe your thoughts and feelings as I talk." Quote, "I said there's a difference between a thought, a fantasy, and an action. Now my reflection on my own rage was actually that I was feeling impotent. So that's where I was going with all that, and kind of normalizing feelings of hatred. This is stuff that exists, and I need to dive deep within myself to reflect on how it is that I got here. So there is a reality here. Like, did I actually cut white people out of my life? Absolutely," she said. Now, I don't know if she's having a moment of self-awareness here, of introspection. She's not apologizing for this. While the initial lecture was open to the public, its video recording was reportedly only shared internally by the school. Now, the question is, whether she's, and I'm not here to berate her or disparage her. I'm here to disparage and berate this attitude. Whether she's still there or not, I don't know. If she is, then she's, you know, stupid as a stupid does. But if she is, if what she's trying to say here is that she went down that road without really realizing she was going down that road, and she's trying to point out that this is dangerous, which she's not saying. I don't hear her saying that at all. But this mentality is creeping into our society. You know, when a cop shows up to disperse, and he shows up because there's report of gun being fired in a Miami area, he goes down there and he gets pummeled on by a group of people, you know, just randomly. When a woman at a gas station gets beat to, you know, probably almost to death by a bunch of people, because she's white. When a flight attendant, somebody jumps out of their seat because they won't put their bag where it's supposed to go. They jump out of their seat, start beating this woman in the face. This is where we're heading, folks. We're heading again. Now I'm hearing pundits say we're heading towards a civil war. We're heading towards a very bad place if we do not culturally get this under control, and we will not. If we do not have a leader to shape that opinion and that vision and give us some hope for the future. I'm Kevin. This is the news according to me. pray for our country and our leaders. God bless everybody. Have a great evening. Talk to you tomorrow.